Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on food apocalypse GMOs when we come back. In 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth. Today it's down to less than 38 days. Now, we produce grain for export, and then we import grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. Our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support the Global 2000 Population Reduction Program. Now, this globalization may be good for business, but globalization is not good for you and it's not good for me. Back in 1940, we all had a pantry full of food to feed our families for a year. Today, we have a 3-day supply in our refrigerators, and we believe in our supermarket system of just-in-time delivery to feed us all forever. But over the past 60 years, we've traded a 1-year food supply for 3 days. 3 days. These global 2000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians plan to use famine, plague, disease, and pestilence to reduce Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years, or so says the Club of Rome. These evil madmen with their global 2000 genocide agenda have a cause that they're willing to die for, and I say let them die for their cause, and then let you and I live for our cause. Now, let me show you from the scripture how to be a live survivor instead of a dead victim. And if you'd like to learn more, then call and order our free general law CD package. That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. And our subsistence and survival school is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. We are reviewing the book. It's called Food Apocalypse GMOs, Genetically Modified Organism. They're playing God and shoving it down your throat. It's a biblical response to genetic engineering. The author is Greg Ciola. It's spelled C-I-O-L-A. There's a bookstore that carries this book. Now, you may be able to get it from your own local supplier, but if you can't, then go to bravenewbookstore.com. It's an easy one, bravenewbookstore.com. Their phone number is 512-480-2503. That's area code 512-480-2503. I'll give you that number once more before we sign off today. And you can get a copy of it. I recommend you get a case of them and then pass them around to your friends. Probably cost you $200 or $300 to get a case. I don't know what a case price is going to be. Ask them while you're on the phone. You know, just say, well, what would you sell me a case of them for? They're $8.95. That's the ticket that's on here, $8.95. And $13.50 in Canada. I think you Canadians up there, your money's getting more valuable every day. I think you're just about on par with us now. I don't know why they charge you $13.50. I guess we're just against Canadians. Genetically modified foods are being certified kosher despite biblical laws to the contrary. That's a chapter here in the book. I thought I'd cover that one with you. Keep in mind, I can only hit the high spots in here. I can't hit everything, but I can hit some of the high spots. Now, you and I don't know if you're a kosher reader or not, or a label reader or not, but I'm a label reader. And my wife is a label reader, and one of the labels that we like to see on a package is one that has a circle U or a circle K, because it's a kosher symbol found on products that are certified by OU. And the OU symbol of a U inside of a circle can be easily recognized on thousands of food and beverage products. And fortunately, the OU is the largest kosher organization in the world, so their response implies that all kosher organizations take the same position. Now, kosher means that the Jewish rabbis have looked at it. The Jews have looked at the product, because they're pretty cautious, careful people. Primarily, they don't want to eat pig. And so, if you've got a product that's out there on the market, and you want Jews to buy it, then you want to go get it certified kosher. So let's suppose that you're a Jimmy Dean Pure Pork Sausage Company, saying you want Jews to eat your sausage, then you need to get the rabbis to come over, and you pay them a fee, and then they'll mark kosher on the package. See? And if it's marked kosher, a Jew will eat it. If it isn't marked kosher, he probably won't. I don't know that it's quite that bad, but I'm just throwing that out there for your consideration. Most religious people follow their religious leaders, whether their religious leaders are leading them down a rabbit trail or not. They follow them because they believe in them. Now, every once in a while, I find a religious leader, and I listen to him for a while, and I say, I don't think I'm going to follow that guy down this rabbit trail because I don't think he's following the Scripture. But primarily, we like to follow this. It's one of the guides that we use here in our family. When we see the kosher label on a product, then it makes us feel about 10 times better. Now, we'll go a little bit further, and then we'll check it out a little further and say, well, now, have the Jews here taken a bribe? Have they taken a gift? And as a result of that gift over here, have they perverted the eyes of the wise? There's a scripture here in Exodus 23:8, I believe it is. And it tells you not to accept gifts. Don't take bribes. Now, we live in an age of bribery. And the thing I don't like about the Jews in this instance is that these companies have to pay to have this kosher label put on. It's an extortion that the Jewish rabbis, the Jewish church, the synagogue uses against business. And I'll tell you a little story here. There was a chicken grower up in New York. And New York is full of Jews. You know, in New York City, I think about 5 million people there are Jews that live there. I've heard that number. I don't know if it's exactly correct, but there's a bunch. And so, if you want to sell in New York City, you're going to be selling to Jews. And so the Jewish rabbis, they didn't, you know, they're not dumb people, you know, they're smart enough to figure this out. So they go to all of their people in the synagogues and they say, now don't buy anything unless it's got the kosher symbol on it. Then they go to these businesses and they say, now if you want us to put a kosher symbol, or if you want to use this kosher, which is trademarked now, they can't use it. Like, just like Coca-Cola, you know, kosher is like a Coca-Cola trademark. You can't use it unless you're licensed to. So, they come to this company. It could be General Mills. It could be Kellogg's or whatever. And they say, if you want to use that symbol on your product over here and sell to Jews, then you got to pay us this fee. That's bribery, pure and simple, which is a violation of the Mosaic law. So, I'm not 100% convinced that this kosher label on here means that it's free of pig or free of this or that or something else that may be bad for us or that's unscriptural. But it's a good guide to start in from. You know, it's a place to start. So we always look for it. Well, anyway, this chicken company up here in New York, they wanted to sell chicken. They didn't want to pay the bribe. So they just put K on their package and the rabbis sued them, and the court said, you can't do that. So after they paid their fines and one thing and another, they came to the realization that if they wanted to sell chicken in New York City, they were going to have to get the kosher stamp, because it's a monopoly that's owned by the Jewish rabbis or the Jewish church or the Jewish synagogue or whatever you want to call it. So it's their monopoly. It's their little thingy over here, and it's bribery, pure and simple. But then it also serves all of us over here that follow this dietary law. I mean, you could be a Muslim, you know. And the Muslims don't eat pig either. And so then the Muslim, you know, he's looking for that kosher sign on there also. The thing that would make me feel better about it is if they did it as a service rather than doing it as a for-profit enterprise. But anyway, be that as it may, in light of the passages that I just quoted from Leviticus and Deuteronomy, Jasher, and Matthew, it is rather disturbing to find that kosher organizations who should be upholding biblical law are actually giving approval to a science that is clearly forbidden in the Bible. What's even more disturbing is the reasoning behind their justification. For thousands of years, Jews have adhered to strict food laws based on the instructions found in the Scripture, or first five books of the Bible, the books of Moses. Today, many health-conscious food consumers of all faiths who are concerned about eating food in line with biblical law, including many Muslims, look for foods bearing the kosher label. Before any foods are ever certified kosher and allowed to use the kosher symbol on the packaging, a team of rabbis must inspect the entire food production process from start to finish. If they find that the food used and the processing procedures are acceptable based upon biblical law, they will grant a food company the right to use the kosher symbol on their products for an annual fee. So I like that. I like that idea. I like them having the kosher symbol copyrighted, and I like them going into and inspecting this food processing facility. I mean, I can't do that. I don't have the time to go to Battle Creek, Michigan, and walk in there and see how Kellogg's is turning out my cornflakes. And neither do you or anybody else. So they do us a great service by doing that. Now, if they're honest and truthful, now, the thing that disturbs me is that they're doing it for this annual fee. They're doing it for this bribe. That's what bothers me, you know. Now, I like the idea that food companies can't use that kosher symbol without their approval. God, I like that. I like this third party coming in here and protecting me from Kellogg's. Because as Mr. Ciola has shown you here, the biotech industry, big business in general, the food conglomerates, don't give a rat's rectum about you or me or our desires whatsoever. They've got a concern in life, and it's making profit. And to hell with us. Now, I like the idea that the Jews come in here, take a look at their assembly line facilities, and then come to a conclusion and say, okay, we'll approve it or we won't approve it. And then nobody can use this kosher symbol without their approval. It's kind of like having the FDA. You know, this was the idea behind the Food and Drug Administration back in the Roosevelt years, you know, back in 04 when they created that thing. It was to act as a buffer between big business and you and me. And they'd go out and check these companies and make sure that they were clean and that they weren't lying to us, and that when they said that there's so many milligrams of this active ingredient in this drug or this product, that that's exactly what was there, and they weren't cheating us, weren't lying to us, which business and businessmen are prone to do. So I like that idea. Now, the problem that we have with the FDA is that the big pharmaceutical companies have taken over the FDA. For instance, there's a story here that Ciola relates in which an executive from Monsanto, it was the Searle company at the time, but later the Monsanto company bought out Searle Pharmaceutical. Anyway, this guy is working for Searle, and he writes a letter from the Searle Company to the FDA saying, we want you to approve this product. So then this executive, he quits Searle and he goes to work for the FDA as one of their I don't know, scientists or whatever it is. You know, so now he's left Searle and he goes to work for the FDA. Now he opens his letter that he sent from the Searle company saying, approve this product. So as an official of the FDA, he approves the product. Isn't that just real special? All right, so now it's out in the marketplace. He serves his time here at the FDA, then he quits the FDA and goes back to work for Monsanto. Well, listen, kids, you know, you don't have to be a scientist to figure out what kind of a charade that is. And that's what's happened to the FDA. Now, I suspect that's probably what's happened to the Jewish kosher label. That's what I'm suspecting here. And I think that's what Searle is pointing out. Now, in the past, you know, I've always relied upon this kosher symbol because I believed in it. It's kind of like the FDA, you know, or your banker. You know, if you can't trust your banker, who can you trust? If you can't trust the FDA, you know, who can you trust? If you can't trust George Bush, who can you trust? That's what we're getting down to. So, Searle points out here, says, I was quite perplexed and disturbed when I found out that genetically modified foods were routinely being certified kosher. So when I began writing this book, I was determined to find out why. So I made several phone calls, I wrote several emails, and I also faxed letters to various kosher certification organizations. And the two questions that I asked were these. What is the official rabbinical position regarding genetically modified foods? And why are foods containing GMOs receiving kosher certification? And I was very surprised that only one organization, it was the Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations, called OU, felt the need to answer my inquiry. Fortunately, the OU is the largest kosher organization in the world, so their response implies that all kosher organizations take the same position. The OU's symbol of a U inside of a circle can be easily recognized on thousands of food and beverage products. Here's their response. It says, Dear Mr. Searle, thank you for checking with the OU on your kosher question concerning bioengineered food. The past decade has been a revolution in the production of food growing. And through gene splicing, scientists can now transfer virtually any characteristic of a living plant or animal into another organism. The new gene is introduced into the plant or animal tissue by way of bacterium. Are there any ramifications involved in the permissibility of such bioengineered foods? For instance, is there a problem with a potato that resists disease with the help of a chicken gene? Well, the implications of bioengineered foods with possible genes from non-kosher sources has been studied at length by the Orthodox Union's Rabbinical Kosher Advisory Board, headed by the renowned Rabbi Israel Belsky, of Yeshiva University. Now, the conclusion of the rabbinical board was that such genetic manipulation does not present any kosher problems whatsoever, and for the following reasons. The non-kosher gene is not implanted into the potato plant itself. Rather, the non-kosher gene serves as a chemical formulation, which is on memory, much like a magnetic tape. This formulation is then reproduced into materials taken from yeast and then introduced into the plant by way of bacterium. The reproduced gene now in the plant is thus from a totally kosher source. None of the original chicken material appears in the plant. For example, the potato. So the term botel, a problematic ingredient, is therefore inadequate because there's nothing there to become botel. There never was any chicken material in the potato in the first place. Does this mean that all bioengineered products are inherently kosher? The answer is absolutely not. It is important that we differentiate between a gene splicing technique, which is acceptable, and bioengineered ingredients which require strict supervision. whereby in the past ingredients used to be made either by chemical synthesis or by extraction from fruits. These same ingredients are now produced by microorganisms such as bacteria and fungi. Industrial biotechnology products, also called fermentation products, can be grouped into three categories. They are enzymes, ingredient additives, and cultures. Briefly, all microbially derived biotechnology products are produced by growing an appropriate microorganism in huge quantities. This is done in large vat-type equipment called fermenters. Growth takes place in the growth medium, for example water, to which carefully selected nutrients are added. During or at the end of their growth, the microorganisms release their desired products in the growth medium. Among the kosher considerations involved are the nutrients in the growth medium, the ingredients added during processing and previous uses of the equipment, and in short, all enzymes, ingredients, additives, and cultures would require kosher certification. Now, please don't hesitate to contact us again should you have any further questions. All right, now there's the answer from the Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations, reported here by the author, Mr. Seola. Now, Seola has a response to that, and he says, "I conclude from this letter that the OU and all of the other kosher organizations certifying biotech foods are primarily concerned with the possibility of unclean food contamination within the scope of food production. However, I am questioning kosher certification on this issue by or at a more fundamental level, namely the very mixing of DNA across species barriers. I see this as the much bigger issue, and it seems apparent to me by the scriptures quoted in the previous chapter that Levitical law would never condone the cross-mixing of species. In fact, I believe that this is the very reason for all of the Levitical dietary kosher laws in the first place. God did not want us to mix that which is unclean inside of our holy bodies. That would not only be defilement, it could even lead to serious health problems. Therefore, foods containing GMO should never be given kosher certification." Okay, I'm going to pause here and make an editorial comment. I'm not sure that that's true. After all, kosher belongs to, it's a property right that belongs to the Jewish rabbis. In this case, it belongs to an organization that's copyrighted the name, kosher, or in this case, OU. It is the Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations. Now, Mr. Seola is certainly entitled to his opinion. I even agree with Mr. Seola's opinion. But as a legal matter, these people, that is, the Jewish organization, they own their own property. If they want to certify Jimmy Dean pure pork sausage as kosher, they certainly have a right to do that. It's their property right. They can certify anything they want to be kosher. And then you and I can disagree with them if we so desire. Now, I'm with Seola on this one. I disagree with their conclusion. And the purpose for my report today is to tell you, to warn you, to give you the information that you need to make an informed decision. Just because a product contains the kosher label does not mean that it is GMO-free. It may be free of pork. It may be free of shellfish. It may be kosher in that it's a product over here that's approved by this organization, but that doesn't mean that it's biblically correct. Now, we presume that it's biblically correct because the Jews don't eat pig. But then, you know, they're taking bribes. I mean, they get an annual fee from these companies. So let me tell you a little story here about these annual fees. A university at the University of California, Davis, for instance. The John Deere Company, back in the 1950s, they came up with a novel new idea. and it was called a field chopper. And so they developed the machinery, the field chopper. It worked like a shot. A great machine. Terrific machine. I used to drive one. I loved it. It was pulled by a 2010 tractor. 3010 would have probably been a little bigger, a little better. But a 2010 would do it. And you could pull the chopper and a big self-unloading wagon behind it, and you could go down in an hour and make enough feed for, hell, probably 100 cows. 50 anyway, 75. I think I made two loads a day for 200 cows. I think it was about 100 cows. And it was a great invention. It was a great, great, great product. Technologically, it was the cutting edge. Now, later on, we found that economically it wasn't a good product, and environmentally it wasn't a good product, but technologically it was the cutting edge, really great. Drove one myself. So they took this machine over here to the University of California and said, hey, listen, test this machine for us. Here's $3 million and tell us what you think. And there's the problem. The John Deere Company wants a favorable report from the university. The university likes to get grants from John Deere. If the university writes up a bad report concerning the technology involved, they're not likely to get any more $3 million grants from John Deere. If they write up a favorable report, they're probably going to get many more $3 million bribes, grants from John Deere. See the problem that's inherent here? Well, you guessed it. John Deere turned out a favorable report. I mean, the college, the University of California at Davis, they turned out a favorable report on the John Deere technology, the field chopper and wagon. Then John Deere takes that favorable report and they put it into farm papers. And they write it up into slick brochures and they put that out to their dealers. And then when the farmer comes into the dealer hands him the brochure and says, listen, if you're still letting your cows graze on your pastures over here, you're behind the times. And you're losing 50% of the grass in your pasture. And if you'd cut it and put it into bunks, you'd get 50% more. You could get more cows in your operation. You could make more milk. You could make more money. And, you know, this technology is cutting edge. It's science. It's scientific. And so farmers all over bought these machines and put their cattle on dry lots and fed their cattle. And then came the side effects, the problems that came from it. That is, all of the manure that's up here in the feedlot has to be transported back by machinery to the field. All of those hundreds of tons of feed that's coming up here out of the field now has to be hauled in the form of manure back down to the field. They didn't tell you about that added cost. Second, when a cow is out in the field grazing and she urinates and defecates on the ground, she is fertilizing the field directly. And while it does waste some of the grass that's being wasted also dies and goes back into the ground in the form of humus. And then the next step in here is the fertilization. Because the cows are no longer on the grass fertilizing the fields directly, now you have to bring in chemical fertilizers to make up for the shortfall. So it's an ecological downside. All right. Now, for all of those reasons, as time progressed along, economically the field chopper became an expense. It didn't make you money, it cost you money. So instead of making a profit, you were spending a lot of money and a lot of time, effort, and energy to chop this feed so that it would lose money in your operation. So most farmers gave it up. I don't think that anybody's using field choppers anymore. Now, that being the case, can you see what's going on here with the kosher label? Got the same thing going on here that you got going on with the FDA. You got bribery going on. That's why I don't like that annual fee that they're getting paid. Because, you know, the rabbis are sitting over here saying, well, if we want to get this annual fee, we got to give the kosher stamp to this company. And the company isn't going to isn't going to get the kosher stamp without our approval, so therefore how much are they willing to pay for it? So the company comes along and says, okay, rabbis, overlook this, this, and this, which is your objection, and here's the money that you want. Approve us, and we'll give you more money. So the rabbis aren't dumb, you know. They say, well, if we want the money, we got to give them the approval. And the company says, if we want the approval, we got to give them the money. So they're just like Jack Abramoff in that respect. They're just bribing congressmen like Duke Cunningham, and they're getting a reward from it. Now, God tells us that this bribery thing over here perverts the eyes of the wise. So the Jew, the Jewish rabbi who might have, or in ordinary circumstances, some wisdom here and could do us all a great service and be a great benefit to all of us, has his eyes closed by the bribery, by the taking of gifts. And let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, the endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that these authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the book Food Apocalypse, spelled A-P-O-C-A-L-Y-P-S-E, Food Apocalypse, taken right from the book of Revelation. GMOs, genetically modified organism. They're playing God and shoving it down your throat. It's a biblical response to genetic engineering by Greg Ciola. To get a copy of the book, if you can't find it locally, you can go to bravenewbookstore.com. They carry them. That's on the web now, bravenewbookstore.com. Or you can call them at 512-480-2503. That's telephone is 512-480-2503. They're located in Austin, Texas. That's Austin, Texas at 78705. They're at 1904 Guadalupe Street for you people down there in Austin, Texas. If you want to go into the bookstore itself, live and direct, It's at 1904 Guadalupe Street, Suite B, Austin, Texas, 78705. I don't have any financial ties or connections with that bookstore whatsoever. They do not pay me bribes or pay me any fee whatsoever to recommend their bookstore. The reason I do that is because I get calls and you know, I review a book, and then somebody calls me and says, well, I went down and they don't have it at my bookstore, and I don't know where to get this. And so I want to push all of you people off onto somebody that peddles books, and they peddle books. And so they're as good as any and better than most. If you can get it locally, by all means, do it. But if you can't, then there's a source for the book. While you're at it, ask them what the price is for a case of them. Now, I've reviewed the entire book. I read it cover to cover. It's not very big. It's 125 pages. Probably has about 30 chapters. These chapters are pretty short and to the point. And there's a chapter in here on widespread DNA manipulation taking place within America's dairy cattle. And so my conclusion is, and I've said it for many years, that as a dairyman, when I was in the dairy business, producing milk for the consuming public, you know, shipping my milk to Humboldt Creamery Association or Golden State Creamery, I would not drink the milk out of my own bulk tank, and I don't know of any other dairyman that would either, because we know how dirty and how polluted the milk supply is. Now, that's at the production level. That's the farmer. Now, we drank milk, and we had our own cow, a clean cow, that we milked separately for the house. And then we just milked the cows and everything that went down the pipeline into the bulk tank. And that's the way the system works today, and there's a lot worse stuff going into the milk today than there was in 1957 when I was in the business. 1957 to 1964. So the milk was bad from 57 to 64, and I wouldn't drink that crap out of my own bulk tank. But today it's worse than that. And I'm talking about all dairy products, save for those raw milk suppliers. There are some suppliers, and I mentioned this to you, I think, the other day. This same bookstore called Brave New Books, they've also got some books on milk. Now, milk is a great nutritional product. God gave us a land of milk and honey, and then we turned around and polluted it by pasteurizing the milk, homogenizing the milk, and filling it full of snake venom and monkey pus. So I don't recommend that you drink it out of the dairyman's bulk tank, but there are clean producers out there. And you can get clean certified raw milk in some places, Georgia and California. And you can get raw milk from producers like myself, just little guys, that have a few cows. And they'll sell a little milk to a few people. And there's a goat farm up in Boise, Idaho. I used to buy raw goat milk up in Boise. And I know of one down in Florida. And, you know, Florida's a big piece of real estate, and it's down around Leesburg, Florida, as I recall. And they're always being hounded. I mean, the government agents are out there hounding these guys because they're competition to the big multinational corporations. And so that's why the Department of Agriculture is out here hounding these little guys to keep them from selling their milk to people like you and me. But if you put your mind to it and you get out there and you hustle it up, they've got a couple of books, the milk book and the milk of human kindness is not pasteurized. And it'll give you some ideas as to where to get a rich nutritional food without genetically modified organisms, that's clean and wholesome, that isn't pasteurized and homogenized, and that would be good for you and your family, created by God and designed with you in mind. And you can get that from Brave New Bookstore. Brave New Bookstore. Now, we were talking about the kosher label. Now, he said, I find the rabbinical position in this letter to be somewhat puzzling, as their explanation seems to justify nearly every aspect. of genetic engineering. Look at the chicken potato reference, for example. Their main concern is that the bacterium used to transport the gene characteristics be kosher. But is it even okay to cross-mix the genes of a chicken or any other species, for that matter, with a potato simply because no material from the host species appears in the target organism? Let me reword it this way. Let's suppose instead of using a chicken gene, we were going to use a pig gene. See, the chicken's clean. The potato's clean. What if we were using rat genes in the lettuce? Would that then be kosher? Well, I don't know what the rabbis would say. My opinion is it's not kosher. I don't want it. And pretty shortly, as I watch the technology, I won't be buying lettuce out of the supermarket. Now, you know, if that's the way it has to be, then that's the way it has to be. So, you know, you people there in the supermarket, if you want my business, and I guess Kellogg woke up to this fact. There were so many people that stopped buying Kellogg's cornflakes that the Kellogg's company has decided to abandon GMOs and go back to open pollinated seed for their cornflakes. And I'm one of those guys. I stopped buying Kellogg's. I don't know that I will ever go back to Kellogg's. You know, you people at Kellogg's may have lost the Gordon family forever as a customer. You may have lost that market share, period. End of report. And I don't say that categorically. I just say in all probability because, you see, after I left the Kellogg's company, I went to the Hain company, I believe it is. And we're now satisfied with our new supplier. See, now we're used to buying this other brand. I never did buy Kellogg's or Post Cornflakes. See, brand loyalty, boys and girls, is very important to these multinational corporations. See, once they get you hooked on a brand, you'll stay with that brand almost forever. For instance, people that get hooked on the Ford brand, I got an old buddy of mine, he's out in California. It's all he buys is Fords. He's just totally brainwashed. I think that he gets physically ill when he gets in a Chevrolet. I mean, just riding in the passenger seat of a Chevrolet makes him sick. I think that's why he said he didn't want to ride with me, because I drive a Chevrolet. Now, I'm just pointing that out because, you know, once somebody gets onto Kellogg's cornflakes, that's what they buy. You know, you're a little kid, and you get onto a brand name, and then you stick with it. People buy gasoline that way. They buy automobiles that way. Brand loyalty. They buy beer that way. When you lose a piece of the market share, it's gone. I know the Miller people. See, Miller High Life beer. I like Miller beer. Miller makes good beer. I like it better than Bud. But the Miller people got off on some kind of a marketing tangent. I forgot what it was. And they used to have 26% of the beer market. And they lost. They're down around 20% or below 20%. Once you lose that 6%, you're not getting it back. Not going to get that away from Bud. And so you want to keep that in mind over here because you represent a tremendous amount of consumer power. I mentioned it to you the other day. You write a letter, and he's got a bunch of them back here in the back. He's got this list. Here's General Mills, Nestle, Heinz Food, Nabisco, Procter & Gamble, Frito-Lay, Campbell, you know, Campbell Soups, Dole, Planters Peanuts, PepsiCo, Land of Lakes, Philip Morris, Pillsbury, Kraft, Kellogg, Healthy Choice, Quaker Oats, Hershey's, Dannon, Hunt's, Del Monte, Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Mars, Tyson Foods, and Sara Lee. Now, that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, there's hundreds of companies like it, but these are big, multinational corporate giants. And General Mills does not want to lose a piece of the market share, not even 1%. They do not want to lose 1% of the market share, and particularly to organic growers or some upstart company. And people in America are moving, slowly but surely, to organic. And it's been a trend that's been going on for around 40 years. Started about 1960 with the hippie movement. And it's slowly been growing and growing. And these big companies over here are not ignorant. They're not stupid people. You don't get to be General Mills because you're dumb. And so they're concerned about market share. Now, here's what you do. And Sciola points this out. He's got some good ideas here in his book. He says, write to them. Send them an email. Do not join up with Greenpeace and then have Greenpeace lobby for you in the Congress. That doesn't impress a congressman one whit, let me tell you. Because I'm an old-timey lobbyist, and I can tell you that that's not what we're looking for here in the State House or in the Congress. What congressmen and representatives respond to is your individual email that comes from Joe Sixpack. When they get a personal letter from you, and that personal letter says something in it, only 2% of people respond to an advertisement. So when I come on the air and I give you this advertisement and I say you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School, if you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to my website at georgegordon.org. All right, so you go to my website. You're anonymous. You'll do that. And so when you do that, I count you because I got this little machine over here, at least my producer does, and he says, well, here's how many hits you get every day. Now, do you know how many of you people that go to my website, do you know how many people of you people out there write me a letter or call me on the telephone? Because if you don't, I do. It's 2%. And so we do studies. You know, we analyze you people. We dissect you people out there. And we're interested in selling you stuff. And General Mills and George Gordon and all of us salesmen, we want to sell you this stuff and get your money away from you. So we're busily out here working our little hearts out over here, figuring out what it is that you people want to buy and what it is we can sell to you in spite of what you want to buy. And that's where this GMO thing is. So they want to sell you GMOs because there's money to be made. And they're not selling GMOs because they're selling cornflakes. They're selling the sizzle in the steak is what they're doing. So only 2% of you people are going to respond. So I'm sitting over here and you send me a nasty letter. I mean, you know, you just really get down on me and you say, you dummy. All right, so what I do is I say there's 50 more listeners out there that think I'm just as stupid as this guy did. But this guy is their spokesman. So when I make a gaffe or make a mistake or something like that, and you write me a letter, I know right off the top of my head that statistically there's 50 more guys out there that are just as bummed out as you are. And that's what makes me clean up my act. When you write me that email and you say, you stupid nitwit, haven't you got a brain, you moron? And then I read that and I say, oh my God, there's 51 of those people out there that think the same thing. And I say, well, gee, I don't want those people to think I'm a stupid nincompoop and a moron, so I need to clean up my act over here. Well, General Mills and General Motors and all the rest of these guys, they do the same thing. They take that same statistical analysis. So when Greenpeace writes this in, Greenpeace, we already know what the hell they think. We already know they're opposed to us. So when we get a letter from Greenpeace, we just throw it in the round file and that's the end of it. But when we get a letter from you, Joe Sixpack, and, you know, unless it's a form letter. Now, there's another stupid thing that goes on out there. You know, this Greenpeace or somebody, they send you this form letter. Well, look, by the time I get six emails in here, and all six emails are signed by six different people, but they all say exactly the same thing, well, then I know that it's canned, don't I? So I just take that letter and I say, well, that's all just BS. That came from Right to Life, or that came from, Right to Choose or something like that. And so a lot of times, you know, they send you out these form letters, you know, like to the National Rifle Association. So they say to you, you gun nuts out there, they say, well, write a letter to your senator and here's the form. You can download it right off the Internet. That's stupid. Yeah, let's get a little smarter than that. So now I'm on the air and I'm talking to about 7 million of you people out there. You know, every year I talk to about 7 million people. So I'm going to say to 7 million of you people out there, if you're interested in this GMO thing, what you do is you write a letter to your senator, Kit Bond, and you say, now listen, Kit, what's your position on GMOs? You're coming up for re-election in 08. And I want to know how to vote. And so I want you to tell me what your position is on GMOs. Are you for it or against it? And then if he doesn't write you a letter, then he's for it. And he doesn't want to tell you, he's against it. And so on down the line. Now, when you write a letter to one of these multinational corporations, the author here has a couple of questions, you know, just like he asked to the Jews there, you know, the kosher people. He said, you know, what's your position on this? And when are you going to shape up your act? Now, if you write a letter to Kellogg's, I think they're going to write you a letter back and say, yes, we're glad that you wrote us. And we're happy to inform you that we have stopped using GMOs, and we are very careful in our selection, and we buy only open-pollinated seed that is non-genetically modified to make our cornflakes with. And thank you so much for your interest and your concern. They send you that email back because they want to get you back on board buying their products. Because see, all of us in business know that you've got 10 friends. I always tell my students that when I come into class. I say, you know, you're important to me as a student because you've got 10 friends. And if you leave this school and you're happy and you're satisfied and you learned what you wanted to learn, you got the information that you wanted, you're going to tell your 10 friends that guy Gordon's the smartest thing since walking on water was invented. And he's just really great and you ought to go to his school. On the other hand, if you're dissatisfied, you're going to walk out of here mad as hell, and you're going to tell 20 friends. I mean, hell, you'll go out and create 10 extras to tell them how bad that is. Just like I'm on the air bad-mouthing GMOs. I mean, there isn't anything that Monsanto can do that's going to change my opinion except die. Now, that'd be a novel thought. You know, if they filed for bankruptcy and went out of business, you know, I'd probably dance a jig on their gravestone. Now, on the other hand, if something is bad and you badmouth me and you tell your friends out there how bad I am, not only am I not going to sell those 10 friends a school, those 10 friends are probably going to tell 10 more of their friends. That's the worst thing you can do to me. The worst thing you can do to Kellogg's is tell them, I'm not going to buy your cornflakes. So whether it's Sara Lee or whether it's Coke or whoever it is. Now, Coca-Cola is not going to change their high corn fructose sweetener in their Coca-Cola until they get a number of emails in there that says, oh my God, we're going to lose market share. Now, if the Pepsi company came along and said, we're not going to use corn syrup anymore, we're going to use something else because of this, Coca-Cola would follow suit. Why is that? They don't want to lose market share. Now, Coke and Pepsi both lost market share with me. And so I still buy soda pop, but I buy the health food soda pop. You know, I want to drink nutritional Coke. Not that bad stuff from Coca-Cola. I want something with vitamins and minerals and all the good stuff in it. So I go to the health food store and I buy the stuff that's organic because I know that they're not using the GMOs in the root beer. See, I buy root beer from the health food store. I probably drink 2 or 3 bottles a year, maybe 1 a quarter, something like that. And then I want to make sure that I'm not getting that GMO stuff. And so, you know, Coke and Pepsi already lost their market share with the Gordon family over here over this. And so when I see these names, and Ciola's good at that. He's got good names. He's got their telephone numbers. You can call them on the phone if you want to. But if you call them on the phone, then you're depending upon a secretary at the other end to write down what it is you're saying. Listen, nobody is writing down what you say. If you want it written down, you write it down and send them an email or spend 41 cents and send them a letter. Now, they'll read that. They'll compile those. They'll put those in a file cabinet. and they'll watch that. Their publicity department is going to watch that very carefully because they're looking for negative comments. They're looking for positive comments. If you like a product, write and tell them. The reason that I'm buying your product is because it's GMO-free. Thank you very much for producing this product. I buy it regularly, and that's why I buy it, is because it's organic and it's GMO-free. You can tell that to Wild Oats, and you can send them a letter, but make sure that you're doing it at the individual level. Don't send them a form letter, because they don't count that. And every one of you that sends them a letter, they're going to multiply that times 50. So if 1,000 of you write that letter based upon this radio program, that's as good as 50,000. Because they know that most of you people are introverts, that most of you people are not going to write that letter. So the number of people that do write the letter really adds up, and it adds up fast, let me tell you. And listen, it's like Frontier Airlines. You know, I got many reports, not just that one guy, but many reports of responses that they got from the Frontier people all over the Frontier system. They weren't nationwide, but they were a regional airline out of Denver, Colorado. And so in Boise and Denver and around where that Frontier airline flew, many of my students were walking up to their desks and saying, "Hey, listen, I'd fly on Frontier, but I don't have any ID." And then walk off. And then they'd call their travel agents and tell them, "Don't book me on Frontier Airlines. I'll pay twice as much to fly on anybody else. Don't put me on Frontier, or I'll get another travel agent." My travel agent in Boise was just absolutely shocked when I told him why it was that I didn't want to fly on Frontier. Because it was a pain in the rear, you know, to exclude Frontier from my travel itinerary, because sometimes the Frontier connections were right there in front of him, and hey, this is the best airline to fly on. And we wouldn't fly on them for any cause or reason. We wouldn't spend a dime with them. And I'll tell you something else that really bugged me was that Frontier never even responded. That was the kicker. The dummies, had they written me a letter and said, "We're terribly sorry, Mr. Gordon, for the inconvenience that we've caused you. And please be assured that we will change our policy. We're going to rectify this problem, and this just isn't going to happen again. And here, let's give you a free ticket. You know, fly from here to there. Here's 10 extra flyer miles." Had they written me a letter, I probably wouldn't have gone on a campaign against them. But, you know, they just ignored me. Like, you know, "You're not worth having, so go to hell." All right, so remember that. The GMO people are saying, "You're not worth having, go to hell." So let's write them a letter and tell them which end is up. I'm about out of time again, so I'm going to have to give you a final reminder. And that final reminder is that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember that the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We're open to individuals, but by prearrangement. We, here at the law school, conduct a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website, and we'll tell you more. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967 for that free general law CD package. All right, The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time is up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.